sucks. Organic colors in the sky. What a thrilling time to be alive. What's up, everybody? Sunday night, it's the Georgia Show. I'm Jake Rowe, he's Jake Roos, and we're coming to you early because some stuff has changed. Some things different now. Georgia has landed two prospects out of the transfer portal, and they're brothers. You've got it figured out by now. It's the Zachariah and Zion Branch crew. They are in the fold now. Not signed yet, but they are committed. We're going to hear from Prize Picks. We're going to hear from My Perfect Franchise, as we always do. And then, I haven't had a chance to sound off on the Sugar Bowl. Rusty had a chance to get his feelings out. It's my turn. We're also going to have a funeral for Jake Roos's microwave. It has left us, and Jake Roos's microwave is no longer there. It got up and walked off.
R.I.P. To a great microwave.
So much tiki masala put in that thing, you just do not know. I don't know if these guys are big fans of Indian food, but the Branch brothers, Zion and Zachariah Branch. And Roos, I want to tell you something. I was talking to somebody just earlier today who told me that, and it was somebody in our network, told me that their school thought Zion Branch was the better prospect and they wanted them more. Maybe it was because it fit their needs more, but they were more interested in Zion Branch than they were Zachariah Branch. But one is the number 3 prospect in the portal. The other is the number 247 prospect in the portal. That's kind of how we look at things. But two massive additions there, massive splash, and kind of what Georgia needed to do.
Yeah, you really needed to get some action going in this transfer portal. It wasn't necessarily looking like it was going to be the biggest season for the Dogs. And then they go out and they grab two guys of this caliber. Now, for Georgia's purposes and for the purposes of most people following this, Zach Branch is going to be the one that excites more people, I think. Just a dynamic weapon out there. One of those guys that brings a ton of speed, just all agility as all get out. So agility with all get out. I mean, a guy who is so dangerous in the kick return. And that's really one of the more pronounced things about his game, in my opinion. Does he solve Georgia's problem for a big-bodied receiver? No, he does not necessarily. But I do think that he is a very capable weapon. He was one of the top prospects. I think he was the number 3 prospect coming out of high school or something of that nature. He was a 5-star prospect regardless, one of the top receivers in this class. Say what you want about USC. That's really, I think, what a lot of this comes down to. Can we read too much into that? I don't know. I'm not saying we can or can't. Some players have struggled there, gone on to better situations and done well for themselves. Some players have transferred in there, done well for themselves. I'm not saying they misused him at all. I'm not saying that this was a USC problem, but I do think a fresh start, good for the Branches and really good for Georgia. Huge shout out to James Coley. You want to talk about one cycle he has done some absolute work in. This guy has come in and from a talent perspective, really elevated the level of that room. Also, too, still out there chasing 6'6" Noah Thomas as well. So another guy that they can still consider, a potential piece of this class. Big credit to James Coley, man. He's got to coach these guys up, and I know people want to knock on the coaching a little bit, but from a recruiting standpoint, it's really hard to argue with the performance here. Zach Branch, just another huge one. And then Zion, too, not to take anything away from the brother. I just think that, Zach's the more well-known name. Zion brings some great depth, I think, to this safety room. I think that he'll be a guy who competes for the spot. I don't know that he wins the spot or necessarily was a guy that, Georgia is going to kind of be going into this thing leaning on to be taking that spot over. But he's an experienced guy, and he's going to be able to get in there and provide some depth, a spot that, quite frankly, they didn't have just a ton of that at this year. So from both perspectives, it works for Georgia. They address two needs, and depending on how you look at it, they get a dynamic player potentially at both.
Yeah, I got a couple points here. One, James Coley is really putting Georgia fans in a tough spot here. You come in and you do what you did as OC, and you leave, and then Todd Monken comes in and does what he does. And here you are, Georgia, you're persona non grata as far as Georgia fans are concerned. Nobody really wants you back, even when you come back as receivers coach. But at the same time, those same folks were like, wide receivers, wide receivers. And James Coley has just come in handing them out like Santa Claus. And, you know, good for him. I don't know James Coley very well. You and I have always cracked the joke. Maybe this is more of a Bark After Dark thing. You and I always cracked the joke that he looked like a Miami Vice villain.
Yeah.
He looks like a Miami Vice villain. You know, we were down in Miami a couple of times for the Sugar Bowl, for the Orange Bowl, and I see big boats, and I'm like, I kind of expect to see James Coley on one of those. He just looks like that kind of guy. I've never gotten to know him. When Kirby came in, I think, folks, we don't get to know coaches like we used to, because we don't get to stand out there all day with them during the summer and cover 7-on-7s and talk with them about guys. That used to be the norm. It's not anymore. But I thought one of his biggest shortcomings as the OC at Georgia was how he built that wide receiver room. He had a bad class. And if it really is one big class, it turned out to be a disaster. It was Mark Webb, it was Jeremiah Holloman, Matt Landers, and Trey Blunt. Landers and Trey Blunt just didn't work out at Georgia. Jeremiah Holloman was an absolute stud that it went wrong in a way that none of us ever expected it to go. And Mark Webb never played wide receiver at Georgia. So that was a big part of
– somewhat surprisingly to me. I thought Mark Webb was a fine wide receiver. I just think that he was a more natural fit.
Yeah, for sure. And he ended up making a little money in the NFL playing. Yeah. So, you know, good for him. Played a lot of ball at Georgia. So, I mean, I'm not poo-pooing the move or anything. But, you know, that class I felt like was a big reason why Georgia struggled in 19 the way it did, especially when Riley Ridley and Miko Hardman left early. Now, I say all of that to say – you know, he's come in, and this wide receiver class this year, the headliners, Talon Taylor and C.J. Wiley, were interesting. And then, you know, to go out and get Zachariah Branch. I mean, listen, I don't know if I'm going to end up getting held to this or not. I don't know if my wife is going to let people hold me to this. But I was so sure Georgia wasn't going to get Zachariah Branch that when the rumor of it came out on the board, I think in early December, maybe it was further back than that. I think it was in November. I said I'd go mustache and mutton chops for a month. I'm probably not going to do that. Married
man.
You're
not a man of your word. You're not a man of integrity. I understand.
Yeah, apparently not. I'm also a married man, and I don't want to have to go through a divorce. But it's, you know, I didn't see this coming. Like, I mean, I saw it coming as it unfolded. And I knew Georgia had a chance, but I mean, 2 months ago, you could have told me Georgia would have went after a guy like this with Texas and Tennessee trying their best to get a visit.
In the portal, listen, era, not over. Georgia can't do it, man. I mean, that was the consistent refrain from some people. I'm not saying everybody said that, right? But there were these people that said, forget it. Never mind. And look, at the end of the day, Jake, these guys got to get on campus, and they will be soon.
They do.
I mean, they do not have a long time.
Like, none of this is official. I mean, would it shock you if later on tonight Rusty pops on the board or I pop on the board and say, "Hey guys, listen, these guys are committed to Georgia, but they are going to take a visit to Texas."
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey,
USC really, really kind of come back into this thing.
Yeah,
you know,
USC, I mean, USC made a move, late move. They're trying to get them to hold off a little bit. It's you know. And I know where brains are going to go. You know, I mean, we've probably got a few of them in the comments. I didn't want to check them. Jason Kessel says, don't be Daddy Cannell. Make the claim. Pay the price. It was an expression, Jason Kessel. It was an expression. Like if I said I'd eat my hat, would you want to see me die?
Jason also asked real quick. 2 months ago, I mentioned a restaurant, Jasper Ballground, that was good. Frankfurt Donor down in Ballground. Go down to Frankfurt Donor. Enjoy their delicious sausage.
Do your thing. So, that's, you know, that's where we're at on that.
It was a big pickup. You address two needs in one fell swoop, landing these two brothers. Credit where credit's due, man. Georgia went out. Look, they leveraged some great relationships here as well. Dante Williams knew both of these guys super well. David Hill, the Georgia assistant out there, knew guys well, knew these guys well also. You know, from his time working in the Las Vegas scene, they played at Bishop Gorman. That's a tight-knit kind of community out there when it comes to football. So these guys all know each other. Georgia relied on those relationships. They leveraged them. And look, at the end of the day, Jake, I don't know this for a fact, and so nobody hold me to it. And maybe I'm completely off base, but I would bet Georgia was not the highest bidder.
I can't believe the Patriots just fired Gerard Mayo after one season with the team. I just saw that pot. It just came down. That's wild. All right. Yeah. So listen, I get the angst, and we're going to get to it in a minute when we talk more kind of about the Sugar Bowl and the problems with that. I get the angst about receivers and this and that. I totally do. Listen, I think Georgia fans need to kind of take a deep breath and ask themselves one question. If I gave you the option, if you could say anybody else, and you've got to take their situations and their philosophies and their NIL monies and everything else into account, you picking anybody else other than Kirby Smart to come run this program? You picking anybody else other than Kirby Smart to make those head coach or assistant coaching calls, or to make these portal calls, or to manage your money, or to trust you to run a program? Is anybody else picking anybody else? Because I really like, these coaches are human. They're out, and we've learned that, right? I mean, you know, Kirby coached a game with his dad fighting for his life the other night. And, you know, his dad would have wanted nothing different, and I don't think it played an impact on the game. I do feel for Kirby as somebody's close to their dad, and you are too.
Yeah.
But there's not anybody in the sport that you want anybody that – every coach in college football, every team in college football would at least seriously considering pushing their coach out the door to hire Kirby Smart.
That was what I was thinking. I mean, what are there maybe five? Are there maybe five that wouldn't at least entertain it? I mean, like, there's
– No, I don't think there's a single one that wouldn't at least entertain it. I think there's maybe five that could pose significant opposition to actually doing it.
Sure. Okay, I'll give you that.
But and I mean, you tell me. You put Kirby Texas. Smart. You put Smart Kirby Smart at Texas. I don't have anything against Steve Sarkisian, but
no, great coach.
I mean, Georgia fans, if Texas wins that national championship, what's the hair on your chest going to look like? It's going to be curly. Stuff's going to look like poodle hair on your chest. It's going to be all curled up. You're just going to be so wound up. Texas wins the national championship. You went 2-0 against them this year. It's wild, man. It is absolutely wild. But Georgia's made moves, and if Georgia's able to get these guys on campus and signed without them having visited Texas or Tennessee, I think it shows you how serious they are. And I think we can at least quit pissing and moaning about that. Like, I mean, you know, I'm trying to check one thing off at the time here. It's one standard at the time, like when we used to teach, just get them one and, you know, go. And that's one of them. Let's just stop bitching about whether or not Georgia wants it. They do. Kirby's not checked out, okay? Kirby landed the top uncommitted player in the transfer portal the day after his father passed away. So I think we can kind of get away from that now.
I like to think so.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Look, hey, I'm not – there's – have there been misses? Yes, no question. Absolutely, dude. There are guys that have come through this thing that they have wanted that they have absolutely not.
And it's been a bad stretch. Like, it's been
no question. Oh, absolutely. Miss after miss. Guys they played host to. Guys that never even would. Eric Singleton, for God's sakes, wouldn't give him a visit and knew that, I mean, was coached by the running backs coach. I mean, there have been some bad looks on it this year. There's no question about it. But this, I'm not saying offsets all of that. It kind of brings some balance back to the scales.
It's the same concept, and I've watched sports for years. Same concept for a struggling hitter at the plate. You know, you back in the day, David Justice would struggle at the plate, go through a 3-for-27 slump or something like that, and you got people saying, "Oh, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He doesn't want it. He's checked out." No, it's just, you know, sometimes these guys get paid millions because what they do is extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult, and they get Kirby Smart gets paid the highest because he won a national championship a couple of years ago, and he made something extremely difficult look pretty easy. And Georgia's not going anywhere, man. I mean, Georgia was in the playoff this year because while Georgia didn't get better and didn't get some things fixed, they're still a well-coached, you know, a gritty, physical, competitive football team. And they've checked off a lot of boxes, and it didn't work out the way they wanted it to. But I think that the events of the past few days, if you look at them for what they are, I think they snatch a lot of the loudest criticisms of this program off the table.
Now, while we're on the topic and before we get to our friends at Prize Picks, we should mention the fact Anthony Evans transferred out today entered the transfer portal today. Jaden Rashada has entered the transfer portal as well. Am I missing anybody? I don't think so from today. There will be more to come. is probably the easiest way to say that. The Rashada thing surprised me a little bit personally, just because I thought that that might be an indication, or I thought that might be a situation he'd stick around and compete for the job. To me, that speaks pretty well of Ryan Puglisi and probably his handling of this playbook and kind of where he is with those things.
Yeah.
That's a good sign if you're Georgia, in my opinion. Anthony Evans, I haven't talked to the guy. I don't know. If I'm guessing, probably a usage thing. That would be my guess. He's not a big guy by any stretch of the imagination. So he's not going to be out there, you know, blocking his ass off. I mean, Arian Smith turned into a good blocker. But
yeah, it sucks for him. He's different than Arian, and it sucks for him because he went out there against Mississippi State earlier this year and I think had like 5 touches for 85 yards. And I'm not talking about punts. I'm talking about just on offense.
Right.
And then the Texas game rolls around. Game flow, hell, nobody did a whole lot in the Texas game. It was the defense giving short fields and all of that stuff. Never really got a chance to get going in that game. And then he's hurt. He's hurt for, I believe, Florida. He's hurt for Ole Miss. I think he tried to come back a little bit against Tennessee, and just never really got back into it. Had the big fumble in the SEC championship game and recovered it. Good on him for that. And then missed a really big block on Saturday on that 4th-and-1. Just sucks for him. I don't even blame it on him. He was, you know, in motion, got set up, was looking inside. They snapped the football, and the guy jumps right across his face and forces the fumble. It's football. It happens sometimes. But I just don't think it was working out for him. And I don't think it's any surprise that Georgia loses him and gains, Zach Branch on the same day. I think that's, you know, that's pretty interesting too. Randy Martin asked, does ETN have another year? He does. We'll be watching that. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he goes to the NFL. I think that might have been definitely the plan after that SEC championship game, but we'll see how it works out from there on out, because what I expected in the Sugar Bowl. Let's get to our friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks, listen, daily fantasy, all right, skill-based. If you know what you're doing, if you can read a good box score and spot some trends, you can give yourself a little bit of an edge here. But more than anything, you can go have some fun. You can pick how much you want to wager on each of your selections. You can go over or under. A yardage is set, and an over or under is set, and here's how it goes. So because we're in a little bit of a different time slot than we normally are for Prize Picks, I just went with a Georgia-centric deal here with the NFL and with some second half lines on what we're watching right now. So in the second half, I got Ladd McConkey over 38.5 receiving yards. Second half, I got Brock Bowers over 36.5 receiving yards. And we're jumping to the NBA for the other one. I got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, the Grizzly vet.
All right.
They tipping an hour. Dog. 18.5 points, rebounds, and assists combined for the Magic tonight as they take on Utah here in about an hour. So that's our Prize Picks. Daily fantasy, you pick how much you want to wager. You pick how much you want to, how many picks you want to make. The more you pick, the bigger the odds, the harder it is to win, but the bigger the reward. And use promo code DOGS, and your first deposit of $5 will be matched to $50 when you bet it. So promo code DOGS, DAWGS, Prize Picks. It's a lot of fun, man. We hadn't had a lot of success at it this year. It's been a lot of fun. me and Palmer taking some L's on the old Prize Picks this year.
Jake, so let's talk about your Sugar Bowl experience. Rusty ended up coming back prior to the game. So didn't have a chance to be in there. Had a chance to catch up with him after the game. We shared our thoughts. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen or watch what we said. There were some things in that game, Jake, that really surprised me personally. I thought that the absolute crashing back to earth of Monroe Freeling was probably chief among them. That was really high up there.
You know, I talked to him at Media Day, and he was so focused. He looked so locked in, and he was down after that game, too. I talked to him after the game in the locker room, and yeah, man, that was a bad showing for Monroe. You could tell he was about to like go all in on himself, and then he was like, "No, I'm not going to let anybody think I'm feeling sorry for myself. I'm just going to get better." You know,
sure. That was one of the big surprises to me, personally. And I know we'll get if the comments are anything like they were the other night. I'm sure that we'll get blowback on this. I thought Gunnar Stockton, all things considered, played a pretty damn decent game.
Fantastic. He got pressured
around him in a lot of instances. And then, you know, Georgia just, it was fluky plays, man. I mean, to some degree, I'm not saying that that's all it boiled down to. Notre Dame won that game and walked away with it. I mean, they, you know, it wasn't like it was necessarily a nail biter into OT. But you know, Georgia did not help itself in a lot of regards. What did you see from the Dogs in the Superdome?
I got some notes here. So first of all, I want to talk about Gunner. I don't think Gunner had the kind of night that where you're like, oh my God, this is a star in the making. But when I looked back and I watched that game again, to what he did with the amount of pressure directly in his face,
and no running game.
Yeah, no run game.
None.
I thought he did a really good job. And if you've watched Dogs HQ Plus, and I may have said it here, you know, I've said it to Rusty point blank. There are a lot of people who believe in Gunner. I'm just not sure yet. I'm not there yet. And I wouldn't say I'm there yet either, but I am much more encouraged than I was. A lot of times I said I didn't see it. I just don't see it with Gunner. I've said that several times. I saw it a little bit with Gunner the other night. I saw it several times. I mean, the read and the throw to Dylan Bell on the deep over route, the way he looked that off and came back to it was great. The throw to Arian Smith, the hitting Delp on the, I think it was second and 14 after Georgia just lost yards on first down. The lack of first down success that Georgia had on the ground, and he was able to kind of do that. He definitely wasn't the problem. Looking at the pressure, the offensive line. We've said something two times this year, and we could say it more. We can say something two times this year that we should never be able to say, and that's that Georgia lost the football game because it had no response on the offensive line, like no response. And that's Ole Miss and Notre Dame. I gave them a tiny bit of a pass for Ole Miss because they were so banged up. You had 3 weeks to rest, and this was terrible. Number three, if you want heads to roll, that's fine. That's just never the way I'm going to operate. I'm not going to call for somebody else's job, but I will say something that's not going to set with Kirby Smart is that this team rose to the occasion. It played its best in some moments where its best was needed, but it never got better. It never improved as a team. It never fixed its issues. First quarter of game one, miscommunications, pressure in the face of the quarterback, and inability to run the football. First quarter of game one. Fourth quarter of game 14, pressure in the face of the quarterback, communication issues up front, and the inability to run the football, okay? You know, whoever's responsible for those issues, which is the offensive coaching staff, it's all there. And I'm not going to give the defense a pass either. Note four, tackling. Tackling never got better. Georgia had double-digit missed tackles in more games this year than they had over the previous, I think, four with Kirby Smart. So, this team just didn't get better. And when I think about Kirby Smart, another thing I think that's not going to sit well with him with this is Georgia had four games this year, where it played with more than a week's rest. And it looked awful to start all of those games. It started
incredibly uncharacteristic, too. That's not been the case under Kirby Smart.
It looked awful offensively in all of those games. It looked awful defensively against Alabama. It looked awful defensively. It didn't look great defensively against Florida. And then it looked, you know, kind of – it looked great defensively against Notre Dame and against Clemson too. But, I don't think those things are going to sit well with Kirby Smart. And, listen, Georgia should never, ever, ever, ever lose a game because they just get dominated on the offensive line. Stalemated, lose some battles, team makes it tough on you. I totally get all of that stuff. But the inability to operate because you can't even get a fourth down throw off because you got somebody in the face of your quarterback, that's inexplicable for an offensive line that experience. And that's probably the biggest letdown for me this season is the play of the offensive line. I came into the season bullish on the O-line and D-line, and I think the D-line definitely answered the bell and the O-line just did not at any point.
Yeah, I would agree. And like I said, my thing was with Monroe, and I'm not one to single a guy out. I'm not necessarily trying to do that here. What I was surprised about, though, was that offensive line passed Ole Miss seemed like it got a lot better with a Monroe Freeland coming in and holding down the tackle spot. And then just a complete reversion, man. And then they had no answer. And I agreed. There were some people that kind of said this on the board. It felt like to some degree they were just trying rotations after that. It was like, let's see if we can kind of get something going here. Can anybody stop anybody? And that's what I felt like was surprising. You know, that's some stuff that would probably rub anybody the wrong way. Overall, look, Georgia got, man. I mean, they did. And I was surprised by it. I think that, you know, Georgia.
What we saw out of Georgia was the exact same thing that we had seen against Georgia Tech. The same thing we had seen against Texas in the SEC championship game. It was just, did Georgia have a chance to win that game? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you don't have there are two different frames of mind you look at this in. It's like, yeah, was that the Georgia team all year and you need to be frustrated with it? Yeah, absolutely. Could that Georgia team right there have done what all the other Georgia has done all season long? Absolutely, too. It just, you know, sometimes when you play with fire like that, something's not going to break your way like a strip sack, and you're going to give up a play here, and the next thing you know, instead of being down three, like you've probably earned with the way you've played, you're down 17. And, you know, that's what Georgia found itself in. And uncharacteristic things all the way across. You know, you look at the you had veterans with penalties in that game. That's not very common. And you had the kickoff return for a touchdown. Special teams was an issue. You know, listen, there were some weird things that happened in that game. It was a weird game just in general. But Georgia didn't show up. Georgia did not show up. Georgia did not have an answer. And, you know, that's something Kirby's got to figure out. But like I said earlier, go find the guy. Put him in the comments if you want to. Find the guy that you'd rather have doing it. Because I know everybody's like, oh, yeah, you want to go buy receivers. The game has changed. Hey, I watched that Ohio State game the other night. And listen, kudos to Ohio State. They were very close to losing to Nebraska earlier this year, and they wouldn't have been in this spot. But you don't play that game, right? Well, what was that team on the other side? Who was that team on the other side? It's Oregon, right? What has Oregon done with NIL? Do we know? Does that not count? Does that not register into the situation? Is it Oregon also Ole Miss spent a ton? They're not in it. Texas, they're in it, and kudos to them. They got to play Arizona State in round two. Georgia got to play Notre Dame, which was a higher seeded team, and that is what it is. But Georgia beat them twice. So, I mean, I don't want to hear that Georgia can't go out here and win a national title when with the current philosophy. It's just not – it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They do need to get better in some spots. They need to play better more than anything else.
Let me ask you this, Jake, because I personally felt this way. After that game, and I've used the phrase several times since, I said that was kind of a merciful ending. I think that this was not a Georgia team that was going to win a national championship. It was a wide open field to some degree, but I think Ohio State would have given them problems. I think if they had played like they did the other night against Texas for the third time, then they might have run into some problems there as well. If that Georgia team showed up, almost anybody could have got them, right? That's the issue. And that was like that all year, man. It was like that all year. That's the thing that got me about that game is there were moments in that game that, like you said, it like harkened back to like every single problem they'd had over the course of the year at various times throughout it. It was a microcosm of the whole season in four quarters. You know, Dylan Bell just gets one. I mean, absolute dot put on him and boink.
At least they scored after that.
Sure, but I mean, how classic was it to have just?
I will say this too. I need to say this too. I told the guys in the press box, Jordan Hill, Ben Wolk from over at 24/7, Palmer was right there. Some other guys, Dash and Jed May were right there. I said coming out of that timeout, I said, hey, Georgia needs to run a post with a deep over underneath it. They can be wide open with that single high safety. Bam! It was right there. And then I said, well, now they got to get something free to a running back. I'd try to get Frazier, Cash Jones in there and get him on the wheel route. Bam, they hit it. Felt so smart. I was so proud of myself. Called two touchdown plays, even though George only got one out of it. MyPerfectFranchise.net. Listen, if you don't know who Andy Ludicky is, learn who Andy Ludicky is. MyPerfectFranchise.net is here for your consultation, for your discussion needs. Andy is an experienced entrepreneur and business owner and franchise veteran. He's been there, and he wants to help you reach your American dream. If you're a displaced corporate executive, or if you've been in management, or if you're already an entrepreneur and you just want to branch out and you want to diversify, Andy's your guy. Hit him up. Go to MyPerfectFranchise.net. Give him a call, and he'll lead you through his process and help you, you know, expand or grow or get to where you want to go professionally and make your dreams come true. MyPerfectFranchise.net. Go check it out. Andy loves sports. He loves college sports, and he loves helping you out. We've had a lot of success stories from Dogs HQ. Roos, let's wrap this show up real quick. I got one core philosophy on moving forward. There's one aspect, and I don't get very dogmatic about things very often, but there's one thing. I'm getting D-A-W-G-matic about this one, and it is...
That's a good segment name.
I hope Georgia doesn't block these young receivers this offseason. Zachariah Branch is a great addition because he's a slot guy, and these other guys they got are more outside guys. I know they're going to go for an outside guy, but I think it's so important to the future of this football team, future of this offense, to make sure that you get Talon Taylor, C.J. Wiley, Thomas Blackshear, whoever it is this year, Landon Roldan, Tyler Williams. You got to get some of those guys integrated in the offense, get them into the flow, start building some continuity year to year and stacking some of these classes so that you have the depth you want at that position. But I think one of the things Georgia has done a poor job of, poorer than even landing receivers, is they've blocked some of these guys from being able to come in and get integrated right away. Because when Georgia had, I look back at those successful years, and it started with like George Pickens getting some work. And then George Pickens moves on to 2020, and then 2020, you know, comes around. Jermaine Burton's getting some work, and then he was able to help out in 21, and Pickens was able to help out towards the end of the season. AD came in and helped out as a freshman. Then, you know, you had carryover from year to year, and I'd like to see Georgia get back to that because that's something that's been missing at that receiver spot outside of portal additions.
I would agree, and one of the things I would say, not that it's like 100% slam dunk that you do this, and you don't necessarily think of things for this reason, Jake, but I agree with you totally, because how you continue to land talented wide receiver groups out of high school is doing that exact thing. You have to do that. You cannot bring in a group like this, because if you do that, that will be negatively recruited against you until the end of time. They will say, it does not happen at Georgia. It doesn't matter. It's James Coley. It's Ryan McClendon. It doesn't matter. They're not going to play you. Don't go there. That's the danger with me. I think that when you think of it from that perspective. So, yeah, they absolutely need to use them. And quite frankly, there's no reason not to. I mean, these guys are really talented players. Talon Taylor, I think, could probably, based on – and we're looking at high school tape, and I understand, look, it's the state of Illinois, so it's not exactly – you know, Texas 7A that we're talking here. I get that. But if you go watch what he does on tape and the crispness of his routes and the way that he's able to separate and the acceleration when he gets the ball in his hands, that looks like it plays with anybody out there on the field at Georgia in terms of just what they're able to do. So I agree with you. I agree with you very, very much. As far as what I think you got to focus on this offseason, it's got to be this offensive line, man, that you have to figure that out, because you have those problems consistently all year, and then it came back to bite you in such a huge way there at the very end with a guy who, for all intents and purposes, had been pretty good for you all year in Monroe. They just fell apart, man. And like I said, they were trying rotations and trying to figure things out. Get in, solidify your five, figure your guys out. Look, it's a position where guys are going to get hurt, and that's just the nature of the trenches. Focus on that, though. Take what you can. Look, between the last two classes, you brought in 12 people, 12 offensive linemen. Somebody is going to be able to push for a job. I firmly believe that. I know that it takes time, but you can't tell me that out of those seven guys they brought in, that every one of them is a bum. I don't believe it personally. Yeah. I think
I don't know who's going to be coaching those guys. It's going to be Stacy Searles. I don't know. Like, it may be, it may not be. It's so early. We don't know. Sure. But where it starts is those guys in that room realizing what happened on the field this fall and deciding, hey, that's not going to happen again. And there's nothing, there's a certain thing that has to be done there for Georgia to be good on the offensive line next year that Kirby Smart's not going to be able to do it. Stacy Searles or, you know, Sam Pittman or the finest O-line coach you could possibly imagine is not going to be able to do it. And that's to get those guys to cut. And maybe they already have. I don't know. So look in the mirror and say, hey, what happened this year is not going to be acceptable again. And that's for Monroe Freeling, Ernest Green, Jared Wilson, everybody as a whole unit. It's a tight-knit group. Those guys work hard. I mean, if you look at them physically, they're all in tremendous shape. They play crappy football to what they're capable of this football season. And I agree, you got to get that part worked out. I know Rusty's been talking about the receivers, and I get that. But, listen, you get Jeremiah Smith, put him on Ohio. Listen, I watched Ohio State get beat up front and Jeremiah Smith be a non-factor for the most part.
I'd look pretty good coaching Jeremiah Smith too, man. I mean,
what's that?
I said I'd look pretty good coaching Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. He's a tremendous talent. But listen, Ohio State's offense underperformed at times this year because their offensive line sucked.
Sure.
And they couldn't protect the quarterback. And, you know, the whole thing that we've all said throughout the whole jump is, listen, my whole contention was you build from the lines of scrimmage, and if you don't have that 1,000-yard go-to receiver, that's fine. You don't need him. Georgia's shown that. Michigan's shown that. Teams over time have shown that. But you're not going to be awful on the line of scrimmage and do without that guy and be a great offense. You're just not going to do it. And so and Georgia didn't check off either box this year, and that's why we're talking about their football season being over before the playoffs done. You know, a couple of weeks before the playoffs done. And that's so it crumbles. And it's not a familiar position for Georgia, but it's one that, you know, they'll be in for many times from here on out. I mean, I still think this is a team that has a very good chance to play for the SEC championship and playoff next year. And we'll have it all covered for you at Dogs HQ, Portal Edition, stuff like that. But for now, Roos and I have to get ready to go do a radio show. Come on over to the Superstation. Just come check us out. We got stuff to do tonight. So y'all take it easy. We love you. We appreciate you. And hope you have a happy new year.